dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, ZIP 6. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Welcome back to Binary Revolution Radio. You are listening to episode 99. That is right, number 99. One episode away from number 100, kind of a milestone, I guess. So 100 will be somewhat of a special episode, so tune in for that. But right now, today is June 7th, 2005. Once again, episode 99. I am Stank Dog. A lot of people will be glad to hear my co-host, returning co-host this week, somebody that's been was one of the more popular hosts that we've ever had, and one of the nicer people I've ever met, and I love getting you on the show. Ilanka is back on the show with us this week.
Hi, I'm glad to be back. Thank you for inviting me again.
I'm so glad we could fit it in, because I know you've got an enormously busy schedule right now. We'll probably touch on that a little bit later on our show and tell. But
it was pretty much insane.
Yeah, let's do a little housekeeping up front. And actually, you can go ahead and start talking about that now, because you were telling me that you're getting a lot of traffic on your site lately. Why is that?
The milestone that I just hit is that I've been tracking hits to the site, both in terms of unique visitors and page views. And I call it the odometer, just rolled over to 7 digits over the last week, so over 1 million page views. And that's been in about the last 2 to 3 years. The vast majority of the traffic is from the book Da Vinci Code, which is now the biggest selling adult book in the world, from what I was hearing. I say adult book because I think the Harry Potter books have got it beat. But
right.
In the artwork of the book Da Vinci Code, there are puzzles hidden in the artwork of the book jacket, and two of those puzzles refer to Kryptos, the sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters. And if you go to Google and type in Kryptos, my site is the one that pops up. And if you go to Dan Brown, the author's site, danbrown.com, and you kind of look around there, he's got some trivia questions, and some of those trivia questions are related to Kryptos. So I'm just getting tons and tons, just hundreds and sometimes over 1,000 hits a day of people researching the link between Kryptos and the Da Vinci Code.
And do you notice then over time, not only did you break a milestone, but do you notice more sustained hits? I mean, is there an actual sustained interest? I mean, do you find more and more people getting involved and interested in the topic now since not only the Da Vinci Code, but just in general, do you see the numbers rising as people find out more and more about Kryptos?
Absolutely. I love watching the way the traffic kind of surges and then dies away. Like if there's a newspaper article, like 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, I was in Wall Street Journal, or Kryptos was in Wall Street Journal, and there was a mention of me, and there wasn't even a link on the Wall Street website, but my traffic tripled, and it must have been because of the article. And there's a CNN thing on Kryptos that's coming up over the next week or so, and I expect that's going to give a big spike as well. But when there's no articles at all, the baseline traffic is I'm getting about 500 to 600 unique visitors per day that are coming in, and a lot of them are researching the trivia contest, but I'm also getting hundreds and hundreds per day that are just going to Google and just typing Kryptos and just researching it. Sometimes I'll get spikes and surges, like the blogosphere is great. Someone will link to me from somewhere, and then all of their friends that kind of read that section of the blogosphere will start linking to me. The place that's most noticeable is another page on my site, which is on famous unsolved codes. and that's like a blogosphere darling, and I'll be checking my web traffic, and all of a sudden things are just doubling or tripling, and it won't be from an article anywhere. It'll just be because it's gotten really hot in some section of the blogosphere, and it'll go on for a few days, and it'll kind of die off. And then the most fun is when I start getting a bunch of links in from some language that I don't even understand.
Right.
Like Japanese. There was a translation of a Wired article that came out in January, but every so often that'll get hot again in Japan. And over the last couple of weeks, I got a whole bunch of links from Dutch sites because it was going through the blogosphere in Holland. And then there was this link on a site. I could not understand the language on the site. I mean, I looked at it, and I know a lot of languages. I did not recognize this language. And it looked to me like it was like a Star Wars fan site, and they were all speaking in Ewok or something. But I finally figured out it was from Indonesia. And it was weird just seeing this language I didn't understand, and then it would say Ilanka, and then it would say Kryptos, and then it would say code. But that was a lot of fun to figure that out.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I get the same thing. I'll see all this, what to me, of course, is gibberish, but I'll see the word Stank Dog, and then later on I'll see Binary Revolution or Hack TV, or, you know, it's like you know what they're talking about, but you just don't know if they're saying, I hate Stank Dog and his hat TV, or I love Stank Dog and this great, you know, I don't know how the context of it, unfortunately. But yeah, I see
those
things.
In my office, we had reviews of our different games and articles that were hanging on the wall, and there was one review that was all in Japanese, and we really had no idea what it said. And so whenever I gave a tour of the office, I would point to this review in Japanese saying, we don't know what it says, so I'm just going to tell you it's a rave review, and we're going to move right along here.
Exactly. I'm not sure if we said it outright. I think it probably is inferred that your site, of course, is Ilonka.com, Ilonka.com.
Yes, exactly.
Not sure if we said that, but we'll go ahead and get that out there. And let's see, what else did I have in housekeeping? I wanted to talk about Freak Factor, which is one of our other shows we just started recently. It's kind of an experimental show that we created. It's we're kind of the catchphrase, if you will, is the world's first hacking, freaking reality radio show. And we had episode 6 was just this past Saturday. It's every Saturday night for a couple hours. And we had a few technical difficulties. We've moved over to a new server. We're in the process of moving over to a new server. And we were able to get it up and running. We still had a show, but we kind of got started a little bit late because of some technical difficulties with that server move and basically some name changes, and so we made the common mistake of programmers and changing names and locations on paths of files at the same time as doing a server move instead of splitting them up. So there was a couple little oversights that were troublesome to find, but easy to fix once we got them, I think. Of course, I really shouldn't say we too much. A lot of that was not theory fixing all this, as usual. Let's see. So the show itself did finally go on, and we had some new hosts assigned to this one. The show is very chaotic sometimes when you have a bunch of people talking at the same time, and it makes for a very difficult show, very difficult to understand. It's not really enjoyable because people talk over each other, and one of the reasons I firmly stick with a two-person hosting situation on BinRev Radio, because it's a little bit more formal, I guess you will, not that formal, actually, but a little bit more organized, I guess is a better word. Some people got a first-hand lesson this time on exactly how difficult it is to run a show that is so chaotic and just so bizarre like that. Yeah, it's a reality show, and there's going to be stuff that you don't expect, and that's great, that's fun, to an extent, but we still want to keep the content fun. We still want to keep it fun and interesting for the listeners as well as the participants. So we do have some measures of control in there to maintain that fun, some ways to mute people, kick and ban people. We have accounts set up and things like that. So a lot of people kind of realize now exactly what it takes to pull something like this off and hopefully have a little bit of appreciation for it. Now, I think people are also starting to understand that the premise of the show is that there is no premise to the show. It's like that show about nothing thing. It really is. There's no premise to the show. It's a reality radio show. And what I mean when I say that, we're not voting people off yet, although that's some fun stuff we're going to do. It's going to be something different each week. I don't want people to get into a pattern where they're doing the same thing every week, like calling Walmart or some silly thing like that. It's going to be different every week. We're going to spring surprises on people. People are going to spring surprises on us. It's going to be totally, you know, who knows what it's going to be week after week. And that's one of the draws that I hope that brings people back listening to see what's going to happen next, what's going to go on next. That's what I mean by reality. This is all experimental. We're just going to mix it up with whatever we feel like doing. You know, we may just turn it over to Alonka to do a two-hour solo sometime. It could be anything. I mean, really. I don't think that one's going to happen, but, you know, it could. We may talk her into that at DEF CON.
Maybe next year sometime.
It almost came to that last week when we weren't sure if we were going to get the server up. I went on and started blabbing, trying to stall while we continued working, so it might have ended up being me talking for 2 hours, but nobody wants that, really. Let's be honest. So, yeah, people are finally starting to get the gist of it. In the beginning, everybody was like, what is the show about? We don't get it. What's the format? Who are the hosts? When is... No, none of that is set. It's all completely wide open, different every week. Some shows are good, some shows are bad, some shows are ugly. Some are broken, like last week. Some are chaotic, like the first couple episodes. They're funny, they're boring, crazy, offensive. Could be anything, any of those things. But once in a while, it's going to be one of the coolest things you've ever heard on the radio. And that's what makes it worthwhile. You know, it's always going to be something different. And hopefully that mixing up of different things will keep it fresh and different every week. So that's really the whole true nature of the show. And I think it's kind of a difficult concept to grasp, actually, that there is no premise or there is no format. So I think people are finally starting to get that. The only thing that you're going to count on, you know, what do they say, the old saying about the only thing constant is change? That's pretty much what Freak Factor is. I mean, the only thing you can count on that it's always going to be different. The one thing you can count on is that you can't count on it, I guess, to put it in poorer terms, I guess. So that's what makes it the reality show that it is. That's what we're shooting for, and that's what makes it fun to me. So hopefully other people feel the same way. So last week, had some technical problems, and we ended up winging it. I think it ended up being like an almost a three-hour show because I let it keep running because people were still having fun with it. So hopefully it's doing pretty well. I mean, a lot of people are tuning into it. A lot of people are downloading it. So some people hopefully are enjoying it. So that's all the housekeeping I have. Maybe we should do some email. Okay, now the mailbag is a little low this week. 2 weeks in a row, actually, where we had less email than usual. So I guess we're not piquing people's interest enough. So this episode, I'm certain, will definitely change that. But before we get into our main topics, and well, we kind of got two. Actually, I guess our main topic is going to be identity theft, because someone on the show who's not named Stank Dog has been having some problems lately, and we wanted to talk about, you found out a lot of information about that process, so that's going to be like our main topic, but we also want to do some Kryptos updates, because I am also very interested in this and getting pulled into it, and we'll talk about both of those things, and I want to leave plenty of time for them, so let's get these two emails out of the way, and then move on. Our first email comes from Sekel, who's probably going to yell at me for mispronouncing that. Sekel, I think it's Sekel. All right, email me and yell at me, that's fine. Who says, hello, Stank Dog and Ilanka. Just wanted to comment on something that might not have been made too clear to some in your last episode. You asked Wintermute if you had to retest when your ham license expires, or even if they expire, and he said yes every 10 years. Well, this made it seem like at the end of 10 years, you had to test all over again, but you do not. Your license is good for 10 years, but as long as you submit your renewal forms before your license expires, then you do not have to test again. Just wanted to clear that up in case there was any confusion for any of the listeners who might be thinking about becoming a ham. He also says, good job on the radio show, and thank you for the copy of Terror Cell. I really enjoyed reading it. All right, well, I'm glad you like Terror Cell, and for those of you who don't know what we're referring to there, many episodes back, I gosh, I probably, if I was a good host, I would have looked the number up beforehand, but I'm not, so I didn't. But many episodes ago, we had some free copies of a new novel that was coming out called Terror Cell, where it's kind of a suspense thriller type, I guess Tom Clancy, I'm not sure if he's comfortable being compared to that, but style of book where the main character was a computer hacker, a computer expert, if you will, security expert. So he had given us a couple copies to hand out on the show, and I'm glad you actually enjoyed your copy. So I thought it was very cool myself, and I looked, and I still don't have any news about whether it's been published yet. We had preview copies. We had advanced copies signed by the author just for the show, and I haven't heard anything about it being published yet. So I will announce it on the show if and when it ever does get published so that people can go check that out. And thanks for clarifying the license. Yeah, I don't know the answer to it, quite honestly, so when I asked Mute the question, if it wasn't clear, I'm glad you pointed that out, that after 10 years, let's see, you submit your renewal forms before it expires, you do not have to test again. So, yes, point clarified. Thank you very much for that. And our second and last email of the show, I don't think we've ever had that before, two emails in the show. This email is from Tommy, who says, "Hi, Stank the Ranter Dog. Is it a new item, or do you just start a new rant every show?" Well, I'll interrupt the email here to answer that. No, that's just coincidence. I just had a couple things lately that made me mad, and I got off my chest early, that's all. So, no, that's not a new segment or anything like that. It's just me being me. So, let's see. The gist was that you didn't like privacy issue regarding Google. Let me make it clear that I don't defend Google, but I don't see how it is different from, for example, a credit card company. They know all your buying habits, which falls in the same category as knowing all your email, at least for me. He's referring to Gmail, I assume. Sorry I got sidetracked. The point is that we trust a lot of companies with a lot of our personal data daily. Does that make Google evil? No. They even make it clear that it is happening. Although I agree, trust us, we are not evil doesn't cut it for me. I assume that a bank or whatever has to obey a law regarding your privacy and data. I don't see how that is different for Google. So basically, you can only judge a company by its actions and not by what it says, just as you do with people. And I guess with Google, a lot of the focus, the media focus, is on the benefit for the end user, and the other tip of the scale is just in the dark. Also, I think Google knows that if one intentional screw-up regarding privacy happens, that their empire will fall. One of the major reasons Microsoft's Passport plan failed: good plan, good intentions, bad track record. All right, actually, there's a couple good points in here. I thought I had mentioned them, but it's always, again, clarification if something was a little confusing. The question, how does that make Google any different? Are they any different than the credit card company or whatever? No, it doesn't make them any different. And you just said in your email that you think that it's not good the credit card company's tracking your buying habits, that that's a privacy invasion. Okay, and Google's no different. That's pretty much all I've really been saying. Google somehow, and I don't know about Alonka, I don't know if you, the circles of people, I don't know about you, but for some reason the hacker community and the community at large embraces Google. I mean, they love Google.
Right.
I like Google, but they're not infallible.
Right.
And I'm worried that there's a little bit too much trust in Google. In Google we trust is going to be on our currency soon, it seems like.
Well, it's definitely going to change. I mean, I've noticed that there's a theme in the hacker scene, which is it's always kind of rooting for the underdog. And then when something starts getting really big, then it starts becoming evil. So whether it was, it could be Amazon, it could be Google, it could be eBay, and I'm sure there were even people rooting for Microsoft at the very beginning until they got really big. So I think it is just a matter of time that until more of the suspicion comes in, and it may not have anything to do with what a particular company is doing, but just that they get so large and then people just automatically start becoming suspicious.
Yeah, that is absolutely true as well. Google has somehow sidestepped that until fairly recently, and actually I think the reason that a few people, myself included, have turned a little on Google. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't hate Google. all I've ever said on the show is to be careful. Be careful with what you give Google. Some of the things that they have done lately, you know, they're scanning through Gmail to place ads on there. Well, you know what? Are we taking them at their word and trusting them that there's no humans reading our email? I don't really like to take people at their word, especially a large corporation of any kind. I wish there was some kind of way that they could prove to me or give me some kind of evidence or some auditing company that will confirm or deny this kind of stuff. And that's just one silly example. My other problems, my bigger problems, is the way that they're combining everything. You know, the biggest thing that I've had a problem with so far is when I log into Gmail and then go over to Google, I'm actually logged into Google. I don't want to be logged into Google. I don't want them tracking all the sites that I visit and the searches that I do. I don't want them to do that. They're a search engine. They're not supposed to be tracking me like Big Brother. So if I've logged into Google and you don't log out, if any of you log into Google and do not log out, you will stay logged in. If you look in the Google.com page in the upper right-hand corner, it will say, you'll see the logout button because it keeps you logged in throughout all the Google sites. So Gmail is no longer separate. They suckered everybody in to this 1 gigabyte email account, and now they've merged their databases together. And that's, I'm just telling people to keep their eyes open and be smart about it. That's all. I still use Google and I still use Gmail.
I think it's a valid concern, and the more powerful that Google becomes, the more important it is that they use that power responsibly. But
exactly.
Even sometimes if they don't intend to cause damage, they can. I was reading some story at one point where Google made some small change to the way that their search algorithm worked. They were trying to improve something. Well, by making that small change, it, of course, changed which sites were going to show up first on any kind of a particular search term hit. And all of these companies that were relying on Google hits for their business, suddenly their business dropped through no fault of their own. It was
right.
Just because of this tiny, tiny change that Google made in their algorithm. And the more powerful they become, the more damage they can cause by very small changes because people get used to how Google works. And then when it stops working it that way, all of a sudden their own lives are going to be negatively impacted. I know that if Google disappeared, or especially Google News, suddenly vanished, I'd feel a huge loss in my life. I've gotten very dependent on it.
Yeah, people really shouldn't be dependent on Google or any one site for their, you know, if that lowers your ranking because they make that algorithm change, you've got to be able to adapt. You can't depend on Google completely, so. Yeah, that's a dangerous tightrope to walk there. But yeah, absolutely. When you get to that size, and when you are, you know, when you're a verb, you know, you're not searching anymore. I don't know if people have ever noticed this on the show, but I consistently say go search for it. I don't say Google for it. Search for it. There's a lot of other great search engines out there that still work perfectly fine. But when you become a verb, when people say Google it, just Google it, go Google it. I was Googling for it. I Googled it. Yeah, that's really big.
Yeah, when I check my web logs, like I said, I've been tracking it. The vast majority of search hits, it's Google. Google,
oh.
Google, Google. Especially for the international market, because, you know, google.pa or google.pt or whatever
right.
The different suffixes are. And all these other countries that are getting online are using the Google search engine, which I see overall as a good thing. Google is providing a service that here in the States, or when we're using English as our primary language, there's definitely other choices. But for some of these other countries where they don't have a lot of choices, I think Google is definitely doing a good thing there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we won't cross too far into business, political, whatever, but, you know, there are some issues with China and the Great Firewall of China and what they allow in and out of that country, and how if there's some search engines that react differently to that. So if anybody's really interested in that, you can do a little searching and find some information about that. So yeah, Google is not evil yet, and I've never said that they are. But, you know, their whole slogan is, don't be evil. Well, I'm just saying be careful. They do this person even admitted they do the same things that credit card companies do. They're doing the same activity. So Google isn't the great buddy, best friend of everybody that they seem to think that they are. They're not the friendly people that are trying to look out for your best interest. Now they report to stockholders, and they're going to report to the bottom line of making money. So the potential is there that they could do things that aren't as nice and pretty and flowers and daisies and puppy dogs and kittens running down the hill. It's not going to be all quite that nice. I don't trust anyone, especially big companies, including Google. That's all I'm trying to say. DTA, don't trust anybody too much, too much that you could get yourself in trouble.
Trust no one.
I'm not really that extreme, but I guess it comes across that way sometimes. But yeah, the thing is, and Alaka, you know this. I mean, you and I are usually pretty open, and we don't, you know, there's a lot of people that don't want their real names out there. They don't want to be labeled as a hacker. They don't want to have that association with them because it's so negative out there and the dangers that could come with being labeled as such. So I do think that you should be allowed or have a right to privacy, that if you want to try to not associate yourself with that, you should be able to do it. So when it comes to going out and doing searches and visiting sites and you don't want it tied back to your real name, I do think you have a right to privacy, and it is something kind of important. So when it comes to those important rights and important things in your life, I don't trust many people.
Oh, I completely agree, and I had a similar thing with TiVo, where remember when the Janet Jackson thing happened in the Super Bowl, and then the next day I think TiVo was saying that that incident was the most rewound section on TiVo. It, people who have a TiVo, you know, you can kind of hit the button, it'll give you an instant replay of a few seconds. And when I read that, I was horrified because I was like, how do they know that everyone in their private homes here were suddenly hitting rewind on Janet Jackson's boob?
Exactly.
And it was because all these TiVos out there are sending this information into TiVo Central saying, well, this is what people are watching. This is the commercials that they're fast-forwarding over. This is what they're rewinding.
Right.
And I was kind of horrified that that kind of information was coming out of my TiVo. I don't think anyone has any business knowing what show I'm watching unless I choose to tell them.
Absolutely.
So I researched it, and to TiVo's credit, they were saying that it was anonymous information. It just goes out from the TiVo with, I think, a zip code on it. But I didn't. That didn't entirely smell right to me either, because yes, it's only going out with a zip code, but it's at the same time as my TiVo identity number is going out, because it has to in order for them to know how to download information back to my TiVo. And also, it's going out over the phone line, and I had no idea if it was going to be encrypted data. You know, if someone was tapping into my phone line to read this TiVo stream, did that mean that they now knew that I rewound this one commercial 15 times? You know, why is Ilanka watching that commercial? And so TiVo does have a way to opt out of that, and I did contact them and say, you know, take me off. I don't want my TiVo sending any information out. It'll be pulling it in, but it's not pushing anything out. And they said, oh, but you know, it's anonymous. I said, I don't care, turn it off. And they said, okay, and they turned it off. At least they said they've turned it off. I haven't personally hooked up something to the phone line to confirm that.
Right. See, again, there's no auditing and stuff that goes on with that, or no, there may be some government requirements, but we don't usually get to see that as consumers, unfortunately. But why don't you go ahead and admit it now that you've kind of let the cat out of the bag. Which commercial do you watch 15 times? Come on.
I have a secret fondness for anything with Duran Duran.
But you know what? You got to laugh, though, at the simple idea of everybody with a TiVo rewinding at the same time during the Super Bowl. That's just the biggest... That's the biggest stress test in the world. I mean, if their servers weren't ready for such an event like that, I mean, you got to just be, like, they went in panic mode. I'm sure, like, somebody, like, a third shift operator or somebody was sitting there with his feet propped up eating a donut, and all of a sudden, bam, red lights went off, and it's like, oh, my God, what's going on? What's going on? A boob was on TV.
I don't think TiVo works that way. I think the way it works is that all this information is on the TiVo's, the hard drive that's in people's living rooms, and then once a day, once every 24 hours, each TiVo dials in and says, okay, here's the activity that occurred over the last 24 hours, and they watch these shows, and they set to record this, and they fast-forwarded over this, and they rewound this. And then probably someone who was looking at all the data going, wow, I've never seen so many rewinds of the same time spec.
and then somebody grabbed a TV guide and said, what was on right then? Oh, okay, now I know.
It was a tit.
Oh, no, on the Internet. How could that happen? There's boobs on the interweb. Who knew that was going to come? Okay, anyway, let's come out of the email. That's just a... You got to... You've got to laugh that that somehow is a famous event in our pop culture history.
Absolutely.
That is just...
Absolutely. And there were websites up the next day that had close-ups of it, so you could actually see the piercing and the jewelry. And
everything,
I saw that, I was like, okay, when I saw the jewelry, that's when I knew that it wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
There was a breast that was expecting company.
Exactly. It wanted to be aired out. There was... Oh, man. Anyway... you know what? I have to say, we were probably as guilty as anyone else. I think those pictures were up on our forum the next morning by somebody. I don't have a TiVo, so it wasn't me, but I'm scared. You know what? If I'm scared, we're going way off of tech topics. I'm scared if I get a TiVo, I'll start watching TV too much again. And right now, I don't turn the TV on. I watch maybe one or two, especially you and I have this in common again. All the shows are over. I mean, Survivor's over, The Apprentice is over. American Idol, Amazing Race, they're all over. So I'm pretty much done with TV for a while. I'm pretty much done, so
no,
I don't turn it on.
I have all kinds of other interesting search terms, especially with the Da Vinci Code. I'm TiVoing anything to do with that, and I'm getting all kinds of stuff. The interesting thing is some of the Christian TV shows are starting to realize that if they put the Da Vinci Code into their blurb, they're starting to get increased ratings, because a couple of the shows that are coming up are really awful, and kind of 700 Club awful. Every so often there's some interesting information in there.
Yeah, and this is probably a topic we should probably save for later, but since you brought it up, there are some people, I guess, that have tried to put in spiritual or biblical references to not only the Da Vinci Code, but Kryptos as well, if I remember reading correctly.
Yeah, Dan Brown, as a matter of fact. Yeah, he was on Good Morning America.
Those.
And it was funny for me because I've talked to Dan Brown about some stuff, and he had actually called me to check his facts on some things. And one of the things he asked was, in Kryptos there are these initials WW. What does WW stand for? And I said, well, I'm pretty sure that it means, you know, we're not positive, but we think that it means William Webster, who was the director of the CIA at the time that the sculpture was installed. And then, like, within 24 hours, he's on Good Morning America live TV, and they ask him, so what does WW stand for? And he says, well, I think it's an ambigram, and it actually means MM, and it stands for Mary Magdalene.
What?
Yeah, and...
Mickey Mouse.
Horrified.
Why'd it have to be Mary Magdalene? It could have been Mickey Mouse. Could have been Mickey Morandini, second baseman for the Phillies in the 90s. Come on.
There you go. Well, the matter has been put to rest in, I think it was in the Wired interview that occurred in January. Mm-hmm. The reporter, who did a really awesome job, I have to say, Kim Zetter, she asked Sanborn what WW stood for, and he said it stands for William Webster.
Okay. So, see, there you go.
There it is. It's a
vindicted,
fact.
Justified. All right, well, let's move into a little bit of show and tell here. I've only got a couple quick things. I went to my 2600 meeting this past Friday, and it was pretty good. We had a little presentation on SQL injection, specifically focusing on web forms, a little quick presentation by Mia Flux, so that was pretty cool, very interesting. And we had quite a few new people again, so our meeting is still growing and still getting more active. We used to get... average of 10 people. I mean, it's slowly growing, but we've had as many as 20 before. Now we're starting to average 15 to 20, so the meeting's still growing and getting bigger. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be making it down there for them anymore, just because it's gotten too far for me to drive and too time-consuming. And honestly, I know this sounds silly, but with the price of gas... a little bit cost ineffective, if that's a proper way of using that term. So, however, if there's people still going and giving presentations, I'll probably still show up to that. But we have a DEF CON meeting also coming up this upcoming Saturday. Second Saturday of the month is when our local DEF CON meeting is. So if anybody's DEF CON meetings coincide with that, don't forget about those this weekend. So I'm looking forward to go to that, especially with DEF CON coming up, because I'm still working on my plans for DEF CON. And we were kind of talking about that a little bit before the show, but you're already set and locked in. Like, I wait till the last minute. You're already done.
I find for DEF CON that my life is much less stressful if I make my hotel reservation about 6 months ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. DEF CON hadn't even probably prompted, set up rooms for, they haven't even set up Alexis Park yet when you order tickets. You probably ordered them before there was a set conference price or something.
I don't know. I think that Alexis Park has had DEF CON long enough. Originally I had to call on the phone, and now Alexis Park, it's all online. You can just go on the Internet and say that you want to be there for those dates and make the reservation that way. But I don't remember if there was part of a block or not.
All right. Well, how about some show and tell? We are going to talk about Kryptos a little later, but what other stuff you've been? I think people have this impression that like all you do is sit around and try to figure out Kryptos all day. And you do a whole lot of other stuff. I mean, you do a lot of that kind of thing, that kind of stuff. But let people know some of the stuff you've been working on lately.
Well, I do have a day job, and that's as a game developer at Simutronicsplay.net. We do online multiplayer games, and we were actually just showing our newest game at the E3 convention in Los Angeles. E3 is a hell of an experience. Everyone who goes to E3 just talks about what an assault on the senses it is with the visuals and noise. Though they're starting to get a handle on the noise. I heard, and this is not confirmed, but I heard that last year it was so loud that this year they actually put decibel requirements on the booths, and they actually had someone walking around with a sound meter checking to see if someone had their volume turned up too loud. And it was noticeably a tiny bit quieter. I could actually hear people every so often. We've been kind of staying low-key at E3 over the last few years, but this year we decided to pull off the wrapping paper and show that we actually are working on a new game called Hero's Journey, and it really blew a lot of people away. And I know it's easy to say that, but we had a bunch of appointments for people to come in, and by the end of the convention we had people coming in that weren't even on our schedule saying, I've heard about this game, I have to see this game. And a couple places even listed us as best of show in our class. The Morp.com, for example, listed Hero's Journey, the game Hero's Journey, as best of show. So now, of course, we have all these expectations, and so we have to work really hard to meet those expectations. So the next year is going to be very crazy for us. It's already been crazy, but it's just going to ramp up and get crazier.
And E3...
Other stuff, we've got a convention coming up, SimuCon, which is when we have customers come in from all over the world who play our games, and they all come into St. Louis. So that convention is coming up in 2 weeks, and for anyone who's ever thrown a convention, you know that those final 2 weeks are completely chaotic. And then there's the Kryptos with the press for that. There was a Wall Street Journal article that came out, and so then there's ripples of press that go out from that. I was invited to be on a talk radio show in St. Louis. And then a couple days ago, I'm at work, and I'm thinking, okay, this is too much chaos. We have Hero's Journey. We have SimuCon coming up. We were just out of E3, and I'm just going to shut everything, all these extra side projects off, and I'm just going to focus on my work here. And then the phone rings. I think it was actually an email, and it's CNN. And CNN wants to do a segment on crypto. So I'm like, well, okay, there goes all my prioritization right out the window, because there's no way I'm going to tell CNN, I'm sorry, can you call back next month?
Yeah, I mean, you want to
so
get
I'm
his name.
I'm currently working with the producers there on a segment. We don't know when it's going to air yet, but we're definitely working on some interesting bits for it.
Yeah, and I know you very much want to get as many people involved in Kryptos as possible. I know that's, you know, again, I said it as a joke. People think you're sitting around cracking, you know, doing, but you just want somebody to figure it out. You just want, I mean, there's the group. Is it a Yahoo group?
Yes, Kryptos at yahoogroups.com.
That's a lot of people working on this. It's not just you. It's just that you're good at it.
I see my skill is in gathering lots of information. I'm good at finding info, and I gather it all, and I present it on my website. So you go to Google, you type in Kryptos. My site, ilanka.com/Kryptos, pops up. And I try to have every possible piece of information, whether it's an article or I've got B-rolls of some news videos that are under password for some of the researchers. I've got every picture that I could find of Kryptos, a lot of the links to the wiki databases where we're trying to gather more information on it. And then also on the artist Jim Sanborn, I've got all the information that I can find on his work, every work that he's done that I know about, and where is it, and when was it made, and what was it made of, and what did he do with codes on them, and what kind of code systems were, and which of those have been cracked, and here's what they say, and just all that data. And it's my hope that by presenting that data, and also by publicly speaking about cryptos, like at DEF CON and at local universities and here on this radio show, that I can continue to increase the visibility of cryptos. And I think the more brains that come in to work on this problem, and it doesn't always have to be super smart crypto PhDs. I just want lots of different viewpoints all coming in and working on this problem, because it may be some student or a gardener somewhere who comes up with the idea that's like, oh, that's what we've been missing, and that may help finally crack it. So I do not have to be the person that cracks it. No, I want to see it cracked, and if I can help get it cracked by shoveling information at people who are smarter than I am or who have other points of view than I do, then I'll give them all the information I can.
All right, well, let's put that on the back burner, and we'll come back to that in a minute, and let's see if we can shovel some information at our listeners and get them, because this is, I told you this before we started the show, that, you know, I get on your site, and I start reading and looking at it, and then I look up, and it's an hour and a half later, and I'm, it hooks me, it's interesting, and it is one of those things that you'll find very interesting, you'll learn about it, and you will kind of be drawn into the whole game, if you will. So let's see if we can increase some visibility. Now, actually, I'm kind of curious about E3, though, if you don't mind. You were there as an exhibitor, of course, like you said. Now, does that mean that you're, like, in a booth the whole time? Did you actually get out to look around? And actually, I think we should probably mention, I don't think we mentioned that it's, what is it, Electronics?
Electronic Entertainment Expo, and
okay.
It's the largest, one of the largest conventions where it's industry only, so it's not for the general public, and it's where game developers and game publishers show off the games that they currently have for sale and games that they are planning on releasing over the next few years as a way of getting attention for those games. And it's a very hot ticket. There's a lot of interest. I'm constantly getting people calling me and emailing me, Lanka, can you get me into E3? Because everyone wants to see demos of the upcoming games.
But it is not available to the general public.
Absolutely not. And they're getting stricter and stricter on that every year. I saw there was a big line of people that were trying to get in this year, and they were required to show that they were in a game company. They had to show, like, a pay stub or some sort of a tax certificate. But they needed to have a verifiable ID. Now, I know for a fact that some people still get in because they've got a link to a game company, and they get in as a tester or something when they're not really a tester. But overall, E3 works really hard at restricting it to industry only.
How about media, members of the media?
Absolutely. Press is definitely invited.
Binary Revolution Radio, now covering games. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we had a lot of press coming in, and we'd have people come in, you know, with the video cameras on their shoulder, and it's from a German TV station, and it was very exciting, very exciting. People were actually waiting in line just coming over to see our game. Though the biggest line that I saw was for the game that got the overall best of show of the entire thing, and that was the new Legend of Zelda game.
Really?
That was over in the Nintendo booth, and I walked by there once, and I couldn't see the game, but there was this line of people, this huge line of people, and I asked what the line was, and they said it was people waiting to get in to see the Legend of Zelda demo. Apparently they had this huge thing where you, like, walk through a forest, and they actually had some physical things that you could interact with. And I checked out the line, and I started at the beginning, and I kind of walked along the line, and I got to the sign, and it says 1 hour wait from this point.
Wow.
Then I kept walking, and it said 2 hour wait from this point. And I kept walking, and it said 3 hour wait from this point. I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, E3 is only 3 days long. Who's going to wait? Well, evidently a lot of people, but I'm not going to wait 4 hours in line to see anything.
Wow.
Maybe the Pope, but not a computer game.
Wow, that is amazing. What else did you hear big words about? What other games and things like that?
There was a lot of buzz, of course, about the new hardware that's coming out. The PS3 was being shown. That was, I think, about a 2.5 hour wait to get in to see that.
And probably
the Xbox 360 was being shown. I got to see, I did see that. They had a kind of a better display. It was easier to see things. The trick to seeing some of this, mm-hmm. for anyone that goes to E3, is not to try to see it directly, but to go to one of the graphic card booths. For example, the NVIDIA booth. And at the NVIDIA booth, they will have several different displays that are showing graphics that use NVIDIA graphics. And out there, you'll be able to see several of the hot new games all at once, all in one place. And that's a quick way to avoid the lines.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, you know, all this stuff you've got going on, in addition to me emailing you going, when are you going to be back on the show? When are you going to be back on the show? As if all of this wasn't enough. Then you got another phone call, not from CNN, but you had something else, and this is really going to be our main topic tonight. What was the other drama that you had to deal with?
Yeah, like I didn't have enough stress. I've also, by the way, just personally, I have a friend in the hospital, which has me kind of frantic because I want to be spending my time there, and I can't because I have everything else going on. But so Saturday morning, I'm woken up by a phone call. And it's from Dell Financial Services. And they're saying, Yuri Lanka Dunin. I'm going, yeah. And they say, in the last four of your Social Security are this. And I'm like, yeah. And they're saying, and did you just order a Dell computer? And I'm like, no. And they say, well, your identity has been stolen. So you need, and the girl that called me, she had like a little script that she was reading. So I get the feeling they do this a lot and they've got standard procedures.
Yikes.
And she said, okay, your ID has been stolen. We recommend that you call the following 800 number, and then you should also put a security alert on your credit report, and if you have any questions, you can call back this number, and this is your case number, and kind of good luck. And so I'm kind of in shock, and I'm just taking down all these notes, and then I hang up the phone, and I'm going, okay. My first thought was, is this just another fish?
I was getting ready to say.
They want me to call this 800 number to enter in my information when in actuality this is just another fraud. So the first thing I did, because I'm really paranoid about these things, is I logged on to the Internet, and I checked, and it was a valid number, and I called it. The number they gave me, and it was interesting seeing the systems that are in place for this. There's so much identity theft going on. I mean, thousands of cases of this every week that the mainstream credit industry is developing their own. It's like an arms race, and they're developing their defenses and their techniques for dealing with it. So I was kind of sucked into the system, and so this is kind of my story about what that was like. The first thing I did was I called that number, which was a toll-free number for the Experian credit report agency, and the number is 1-888-397-3742, so I'll verify that that's a legitimate number as well. And a lot of people, they know they have credit reports, but they don't know that much about credit reports. Well, I now know a lot about credit reports, and there are three primary credit report agencies. They're called Experian,
right.
Equifax, and TransUnion.
Right.
And they do share information between them, but the information that each of them has is vastly different. The reports that they produce are vastly different. So I called the Experian number, and it was all automated, and I put what's called a security alert on my report. By putting it on Experian, it also went on the reports of the other two agencies, Equifax and TransUnion. I then started calling law enforcement. I called the FBI. I went down to the St. Charles Police Department, and I filed a report there. I will say that the police were not that supportive because I did not have a specific loss. Since Dell was on the ball and had noticed that the information was incorrect, and they had not opened an account and someone had not taken out a loan in my name, I hadn't actually lost any money. And the police were kind of reluctant to file a report on that, but I know better, and because I've been to talks on identity theft, and I pushed, and I insisted that they file a report, and then I got a complaint number, and then I started filing the report with other places, the FTC website and the FBI website, and they asked, have you filed this with the police, and what is the complaint number, and so I had all of that information.
Hmm.
I've also been calling various creditors and letting them know. And then I found out also that the state legislatures are also starting to get on the ball on this, and you don't have to pay for your credit reports. For example, here in Missouri, they passed a law, I think, in March that says everyone is required to a completely free credit report at least once a year. And if you want to get that credit report, you go to a site which is annualcreditreport.com. And you enter in your information and what state you're from, and then that will route you to all three of the different agencies, and then you can enter in information there. And it's kind of interesting. It's all automated, but they still do things to verify your identity. And I'm not going to say exactly what those were. If anyone's curious, they can go and log in for themselves. But I thought it was some creative stuff. And if you go to each of those sites and you enter in your information, and then they will show you your entire credit report right there on the spot. You're not waiting for snail mail. And you can print it out. And I was surprised how the credit reports were so different between the agencies. I was also surprised at some of the other errors that have crept in. For example, my address, my current address, was often confused with the addresses of my relatives, and I would see, like, my sister's address in there and my parents' address in there. Hmm. So those are things that I'm going to have to do to go in and get that straightened out. I didn't see, I mean, I'm still reviewing. There's a lot of data. But so far I haven't seen that I was actually out any money. I think Dell was on the ball.
Yeah, how did Dell catch it?
Shall I continue here?
How did Dell catch it? Let's back up to the beginning. What triggered Dell to think that this had even happened in the first place?
I don't know the exact details. My guess is that Dell was contacted by someone who said they used my name, they used my Social Security number, they applied for a loan, and then Dell had the phone number once they did a credit report on my Social Security number and called my number to verify. And I said, no. And they said, okay, well, someone is trying to do this in your name. They may have also seen that the shipping address was different from my home address. I don't know.
I see.
My gut from the research that I've done on identity theft, and I've done a lot of research even before this incident. I've been to a lot of talks on it and done a lot of reading on it. There are some really scary groups getting going out there with identity theft, and it's getting very linked with organized crime, especially coming out of other countries, especially in Eastern Europe. And what often happens is some of these very organized groups out of there, and these are the kind of people that they'll come out and break your legs if you don't do what they want. And people have literally been killed in the hacking scene over there. They're not playing around. But they will break into American banks and American and Western financial institutions, grab the database, and then either hold it hostage trying to get payments in order to not release it, or they will just go ahead and sell it. And if they do get payments, all that's going to happen the next day is that they come back and say, okay, now give us more, now give us more.
Right.
There are groups over there where you can log into chat rooms and just see a constant, steady scroll of IDs. Names, Social Security numbers, everything. They are selling for about $1 a piece. It's very, very cheap. And my guess, and again, this is just a guess. I don't know for sure that this is what happened to me. I'm pretty sure that my data, it didn't go out because of anything I did, because I'm super paranoid about this stuff.
Right.
But probably somebody broke into one of these financial institutions that had my information. The information was harvested that way, and it was in some pool. Someone wanted to buy a computer, and they just, when they needed to apply for a loan, they just randomly reached into the pool, pulled out my name to see if it would work. It didn't. My guess is that they just kept reaching into the pool and pulling out other people's names until they found something that did work.
Hmm.
I've definitely seen that happen as well.
But why
I can't
is
go
this...
into the details, but I do a lot of fraud checking.
Right, but why is this, I mean, you even said yourself, why is this... The hacking scene. Why does this get associated with hackers? I mean, this is really more of an organized crime syndicate, an organized crime scene. They may have computer people in there that have skills to do breaking and entering and stuff like that, but when you see and hear this about on your local news, you don't hear that there are these organized crime syndicates. What you hear is that all the evil hackers are out to steal your credit card.
Well, I think that's just a semantics issue in terms of when we use the word hacker or the news uses the word hacker. And when I use the word hacker, it could really mean either thing. I could say hackers in Eastern Europe, and that could mean something entirely different from when I say hackers in St. Louis 2600.
Right. I wish the media would start differentiating more, though.
I think that the clue level is rising.
Yeah,
they're realizing
a long fight.
That I've talked to some law enforcement here in St. Louis, and I've done a lot of educating of law enforcement here in St. Louis, and they understand that when there's a local 2600 meeting, it's not a bunch of wannabe criminals. It's generally it's a hobbyist group.
Right.
It's an identity thing. It's fun. It's taking apart hardware, and it's not people seeking to defraud their neighbors.
Right.
But these same law enforcement also understand that, especially in other countries, that it's a very, very different thing. And they've told me some stories, which has really opened my eyes to the kind of thing that's going on. It's to the point that some of the large online retailers here, for example, Amazon and others, I have heard that they will no longer ship to certain addresses outside of the U.S. simply because the majority of orders that come in from those countries are fraud.
Oh, yes, certainly.
It's bad identities. So as the arms race continues, what's happening is these hacker groups, what they're doing is they're looking for reshippers, and so they will reach out to people in the United States and say, hey, can you do me a favor? I'm going to be placing some orders, and the orders are going to be coming to your house. Can you just get it and then put a new label on it and ship it out to me, and I'll pay you for your trouble? And it sounds like a good deal, and some of these reshippers may be making thousands of dollars a month until the law catches up with them, and then they're going to jail.
Right.
But I've also noticed that in my email spam, along with the 419 scams, the Nigerian stuff, mm-hmm. that I'm starting to get an increase in letters like that. I don't know if any of your listeners have noticed, but letters that are saying, hi, can you help me with a shipping problem? And my advice is don't do it. Just don't get involved. Just say no.
Yep. DTA, don't trust anyone.
Yep.
See? Well, let's see. Like you said, it's ongoing, and there's some things you can't really talk about. But all in all, what kind of – A, how confident are you that it's going to work out? And B, how much of a hassle is it going to cause? To what extreme? For example, do you have to go be issued new credit card numbers with new numbers on them and new do you have to change your social? Do you have to – I mean, how far-reaching are the impact of your life? How annoying is it to have to recover from something like this?
Well, I think in my case, I think I got lucky. I think and I'm still reviewing my credit report, so I can't say this with certainty, but it looks like that was the main attempt that was made, the Dell attempt, and it was not successful. However, I've heard of many other people who have had attacks made and it was not defended against, and people who have had mortgages placed in their name and loans taken, and they are suffering financial losses because their credit history is getting so tangled up. For me, I don't think I'm going to have to apply for a new number or new credit cards or anything like that. But this just happened yesterday, so right. I'm just kind of giving you an in-process progress report here. And if you want, I'll tell you on a future show, and if there's anything else that comes of it, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, definitely email us and let us know how it turns out and any other interesting information. I mean, again, hackers may be labeled sometimes with this, with the media and whatnot, by the ignorant media, that is, and we can be victims of this just as much as anyone else.
Right.
And even people...
kinds of stupid ways to let information get out. People who will give their Social Security number over the phone or will be sloppy with their bank statements and toss them in the trash. I don't believe I did that. I believe that I did all the things right in terms of keeping my information secure. And I mean, just like you were saying, don't trust anybody. I've got a big, wide streak of paranoia. Even when a bona fide creditor calls me, and I'm not going to give them any information until they really prove the heck out of who they are.
Exactly.
But even when you take all the precautions, you can still get hit.
Yep, and I guess that's the moral of the story. That's the thing. Don't. I know it sounds silly and somewhat as a joke, but really don't trust anyone. Like, even when you initially started the story, you got a call from Dell asking these questions. I immediately even suspect the call, and you said that yourself too. You learned on the internet to make sure that was a valid number they had you calling. You made sure you didn't give them any information if they were doing a phishing attempt on you.
Absolutely.
Via phone. So, you got to be careful. Always, always be thinking, why are they asking this, and what would be the reason, and what should I say, and what shouldn't I say? All very important things. Never trust anybody blindly, blindly like that. Because it could be anybody. It really could.
Amen.
It really could. All right, well, I tell you what, unless there's something else you wanted to mention or any other advice about this topic, again, I wanted to talk about this because it does affect us. We're not doing it. We're victims of it like anyone else, we as hackers, that is. So, and again, it may turn into a semantics debate and one that's not worth wasting time on, but I would debate that people who do that aren't really hackers anyway.
What would you call them?
Criminals.
I agree, absolutely.
Criminals.
They're definitely criminals. But they're criminals who use cyber techniques. They're cyber criminals.
Yeah, absolutely. A criminal with a computer is still a criminal first and foremost. Well, anyway, let's move on to some non-criminal discussion. And let's talk about cryptos. We kind of alluded to it earlier and we touched on it. But let's kind of talk about some updates on it. And when we had you on the show before, I really wanted people to get a feeling about cryptography in general and motivate them and let them realize that, like you said this earlier, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a microbiologist or all, you know, anybody can figure these things out. And you've told me stories before of, you know, you might go to, even like children may notice a pattern and notice something that you just didn't think of. It's a different point of view or a different mindset that actually does give you some insight or help you figure something out. And the last time we had them on the show was hopefully to get people to realize that there are things that you can do, and you absolutely have a chance at finding something that someone has overlooked. And case in point, Mr. Sanborn mentioned that the biggest, most obvious clue to solving the last part of cryptos, and we'll back up and explain that what that means in a minute, still hasn't been found. Yet it's the most obvious and easiest one to find, according to him. So I think that's interesting that the most obvious thing is, in his mind, still hasn't been found. So all these great minds, maybe we're looking too hard and too deep. But let's back up to what cryptos is.
For the record, the exact quote, and this is at the end of the Wall Street Journal article.
Okay.
It said, despite the struggles of would-be codebreakers, Mr. Sanborn insists the puzzle can be solved and teases them by saying that one clue overlooked so far is sitting in plain view. Quote, the most obvious key to the sculpture nobody has picked up on, unquote.
Yeah, see, if it's obvious, maybe it just takes someone with a different view or a different mindset or a different idea to help find that.
Yeah,
well, let's talk about the cryptos.
We're hoping that, I mean, we've definitely been churning over that sentence. I don't know whether Sanborn is saying that no one's picked up on it, or maybe we've picked up on it and he just doesn't know because he's not in our brainstorming group, but it could be either way. We know the first three parts. We know what they say. We know what the keys are for those three parts.
Well, let's break those three parts down, if you will. There are four total parts to it, so why don't you explain 1, 2, 3 and where we are now.
Okay, there's a couple thousand characters, not exactly, I know people are going to get them, it's not 2,000, but approximately, ballpark, there's about 2,000 characters on Cryptos. We know that there are four sections here. The first section is the top two lines, the second section starts at line 3 and goes down to the bottom of the plate. Cryptos is made up of four plates, and the code is on two of those plates. So parts 1 and 2 are on that top plate. And on the bottom plate, we have parts 3 and 4.
Okay.
The first part decrypts to the sentence, between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. And the word illusion is misspelled with a Q. And I've talked to Sanborn about that typo. I said, was it just a mistake or what was it? Because there's no such word as occlusion. He says, no, it was deliberate, but it's not what it is that's so important. It's where it is. Its orientation or its positioning.
Okay, and that's where the rubbings are important, that you can see the orientation in the pictures.
I have rubbings of the sculpture that I obtained when I was on the grounds at CIA, when I was speaking there about Al-Qaeda codes in 2002.
And
I have rubbings of certain sections. Specifically, there's an area on sculpture where the letters are a little bit out of alignment. There's three letters that are kind of raised up, about an inch or so, and there's two letters that are kind of scrunched in. I had that in a PowerPoint slide, and I was showing my slides to Sanborn, And when I showed him that slide about the out-of-alignment letters, he pointed at them and he said, has anyone figured anything out about those yet? They're important.
Hmm.
So those, they might be the key that he's referring to, but I don't know. It, some people have said, well, you know, the sculpture sort of looks like a flag, or maybe it's location, or maybe there's this round pool.
It's the Windows logo.
There's all kinds of ideas that are coming out there, but we really just don't know.
It's the Windows logo. I solved it. It's the Windows logo. And the four. Jeez, you guys haven't figured that out yet? No. And also, in case we didn't mention it, the location of the actual... This is a, again, you have pictures on the site, of course, Ilanka.com, but this is located where and exactly, it's a sculpture, but kind of go into a little bit of the grounds and exactly.
Okay. When the CIA commissioned a new headquarters building to be built in addition to their old headquarters building at Langley, Virginia, which is where CIA is based, they commissioned this building in the late 80s, and they put out the word to the art community saying we want art to go along with the building. And Sanborn had done public art projects before, and he applied for it and got the bid and then decided to do a lot of research, and then he decided he wanted to do something involving codes. So it wasn't something that the CIA asked for, but that's what Sanborn decided to do.
Okay.
So the new headquarters was built, and in between the old building and the new building is a courtyard. Standing in this courtyard is the crypto sculpture. So it's about 10, 12 feet high. It's about 20 feet long. And it looks like a flag. It's kind of a wavy screen of copper that's extending from a large post of petrified wood. There are letters punched through these copper sheets. And so there's about 2,000 letters that are punched into the sculpture. And half of the sculpture, the letters are what's called a visionaire tableau, which is a way of, it's an encryption system. Mm-hmm. The other half of the sculpture has the ciphertext. So that half with the ciphertext, there are four codes. We have solved three of them. We don't know what the fourth section is, and it's currently one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. Now, Sanborn also made other pieces around the CIA campus. He designed other parts of that courtyard in between the new and old headquarters building. And also, on the other side of the new headquarters building, there is a path leading straight into the headquarters building, the entrance. On either side of that path, Sanborn placed some other pieces of art, which are basically large slabs of granite, about a foot thick, that look like they're tilting up out of the ground, like a geological seam that's being, where you can just see the top of it. These slabs are cut in very jagged shapes, so it's possible that the jagged angles are pointing to, at something we don't know, or maybe like puzzle pieces. Again, we don't know. And in between the slabs, there are sheets of copper, and these sheets of copper have Morse code messages in them. Sanborn has said that these Morse code messages are related to the second part of the code on the crypto sculpture, but we don't know what that means when he says that they're related.
But the second part is finished,
entrance,
right?
There are some slabs. One of them has a compass rose, a carved compass rose, where the needle is not pointing north. It's pointing in a different direction towards a rock, which is a lodestone, a magnetic stone that Sanborn placed there. And that's a common thing of Sanborn's. He's done other compass roses with lodestones, and we've done things. There's three sculptures of his with compass roses in the D.C. area, and we tried, like, plotting them all on a map and seeing which way they point, but haven't really come up with anything on that. There's also another slab in that front entrance area which has nothing on it that we can see. It might have some mild grooves. We're not sure. We're frustrated by not really being able to do some close-up observations of it. I mean, I'm considered to be one of the world's foremost experts on cryptos, and I've only seen the thing once. Everything else I've got is from little snippets of photos here and there and maybe a B-roll of a newsreel video, but we're really kind of peering through this very small window trying to see as much as we can about the sculpture.
Now, you said the Morse code related to the second part, but isn't that already been solved?
Yes.
So
yes, that part, and I can read it. The second part decrypted says, "It was totally invisible. How is that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field, X. The information was gathered and transmitted underground to an unknown location, X. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere, X. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message, X. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west, ID by Rose. That last part might also be ID by row S. We're not sure. We have to guess as to the punctuation on all these.
Oh, see, now that's what frustrates me about you don't know which one of those. It could be either one. That's the stuff that kills me with some of these. Oh.
Yeah. The latitude and longitude coordinates are interesting, especially the thing about 6.5 seconds north. Any of your listeners who have played with GPSs or done geocaching,
right,
they know that a tenth of a second of latitude is a very specific location, about 10 feet across. So it's interesting that the text says 6.5 seconds, not 6 seconds, not 7 seconds, no, it's 6.5. So we've tracked out where it points to, and it points, some people thought it pointed to the sculpture, but it doesn't. It points to a location about 150 feet southeast of the sculpture, also in that courtyard area. Now, we have people that have been helping out who occasionally have access to the grounds, and they've gone and looked there. They say they couldn't see anything unusual.
Grab a shovel. It's underground.
It's possible. It's also, Sanborn, one of his favorite things to say is, it's possible. Anything's possible. Another speculation is that maybe it's not that spot where we need to dig, but maybe that is the corner of some sort of a parallelogram or a rectangle or a triangle. So maybe we need to figure out three points, that point and the crypto sculpture and maybe something in the front entrance pieces, and then go dig at the fourth point. We don't know. And whenever I give talks about the sculpture, I will say, we don't know, I don't know, I can't tell you for sure if this is right or not.
Damn it, Alonka, let's go up there. Let's grab a shovel.
If you can figure out a way to get me on grounds, I'm there.
Yeah, if you can't get on grounds, there's no way I'm going to get on grounds, that's for sure.
Well. Shall I read the third part or tell you more about the first two parts?
I want you to read the third one next. However, before you do, is the actual context of the messages lead to the solution of the fourth one? Are there clues? Are they significant, or are they just a famous quote that he felt like making? Here's the payoff, and now three is unrelated to two. Or are there clues for two to figure three, or clues for three to figure four, or all of them to help figure four?
Those are really good questions, and I don't know. We know that the first sentence, between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. We were wondering, was it a line from a poem or something? But Sanborn said no. It's an original sentence written by him with carefully chosen wording. So it's possible that it is giving a clue to the key for one of the other parts. The keys to open the first part, it's a visionaire system that uses two keywords, and the keywords are cryptos, and the other keyword is palimpsest. Palimpsest, by the way, is a word for a scroll that has had one message written on it, then that message was scraped off, and another message was then written on it, and you can maybe see bits and pieces of the old message showing through.
And can you see?
Some people have looked at ways that maybe that between subtle shading and the absence of light, it might mean the word, the keyword for the next section. The keywords for the second section were cryptos and abscissa. Abscissa, A-B-S-C-I-S-S-A. Abscissa is a mathematical term meaning the x-coordinate on a graph. And between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. It might be a clue for the word abscissa. Between subtle shading, SS, and the absence, you have ABS, and light is C. So it's possible that those kind of all work together. But that's just sheer speculation, and it might be total coincidence.
You know who could solve this? The Hardy Boys.
Hey, let's get them on the case.
All right, so part three. Part three also has some interesting text on it.
Right. Part three used a completely different cryptographic system. It did not use Visionaire, what was called a polyalphabetic substitution system. Instead, it used a transposition system. And it came out to say, slowly, desperately slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. X. Can you see anything? Q.
All right, so just listening to you, I've heard the letter X mentioned frequently, and that's the second time with the letter Q, because there was a misspelling earlier with the letter Q, occlusion.
Right. There's also a misspelling in the second part. The word underground is misspelled, and Sanborn has said that that one also was deliberate.
So then there's a significant, if they're deliberate, it's because there's some significance to them.
Yeah. Did you recognize the third part, by the way?
Not from listening to it, but I know the answer from reading your site, but go ahead. And
it is, and there's probably some of your listeners that are jumping up and down right now, and yes, we know that this is a paraphrased extract from the diary of the archaeologist Howard Carter on November 26, 1922, which was the day that he discovered King Tut's tomb.
All right, so is there an underground part of the CIA headquarters there?
There's a lot of things underground at CIA. Not that I've personally seen, but I know that there's a big chunk of it underground.
I'm certain that we can't even get on the grounds. I know we're not going to get underground. Yikes. Okay, so that brings us up to the fourth part that has not been solved. Now, just to reiterate, or just to clarify, all of the clues that we just mentioned and all of the phrases, like, for example, what's an example? Like the X's and the Q's. Which one was broken first? Part one, I assume?
Part two.
Part two was broken
with the X's, yes.
Part two was figured out first. And then part one was figured out subsequently. Were there things in part two that helped to solve part one?
Well, there's different people that have solved it in different ways. The first person that we know for sure solved it was a man named David Stein, who worked at the CIA, and he did it on his own time, you know, weekends and whatnot. CIA is very careful to say that he wasn't using his work hours to be working on the code.
All right.
He did it with pencil and paper, and my understanding is that, yes, he solved part two first. Another solver was Jim Galogli, who was a computer scientist in California, and he has some really elaborate computer programs that he used, and he ran computer attacks on it, and I'm not sure which section he solved first. He may have said that at some point, but I don't recall. I'm sorry, Jim.
But do we know that, like, one part was used to help with another part? Let's jump to part three, where it's parts one and two in any way helpful or used to help crack part three.
To my knowledge, no.
So we don't necessarily know that all of these particular clues and stuff that we found in the first three parts, or these intricacies and these nuances, if they really do have a relevance to part four. They may or they may not.
Right. I did come up with a system where at the end of part two it says ID by rows. And it's possible that that is a hint for part three, because part three, it's a transposition system where you have to put things in rows. But that, again, that's just speculation. We don't know that for sure.
Okay, so
now, Sanborn did not know about codes at the time that he created the sculpture. He decided he wanted to do something with codes, and then he partnered with another man named Ed Scheidt, who was the chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center and was getting ready to retire. And Ed taught Jim Sanborn about various encryption systems. Now, when we've talked to Ed, for example, after David Stein solved the first three sections, and he gave a talk on this at CIA, and at the end of the talk, Ed went up to David Stein and said, "Congratulations, you solved them, but not in the way that they were intended to be solved." And I have also personally met Ed Scheidt at one of the art show openings for Sanborn in D.C., and Scheidt said something similar, which is that there are keys to the sculpture and that we solved it without recovering the keys.
We can, if we come up with something that we believe is on the right track, if we come up with a breakthrough, like noticing that there were some characters that were off by about an inch, a little bit higher than the others, or we notice some sort of pattern, you particularly have been able to approach Mr. Sanborn and say, "Hey, we discovered this," and he doesn't like to give, say, "You're on the right track" or anything, but he will say things like, "Yes, that is correct," or "No, that's..." I mean, is he forthcoming with any kind of help exactly?
I wouldn't call it help, but there are times when people have contacted me privately and said, I think I've solved Cryptost. I think this is what it says. Can you forward this to Sanborn? And I forward it to him, and he comes back and says no. but he is willing to communicate about it, yes. And I should also add that if someone just comes at me out of the blue and says, I solved Cryptost, it says 420 years ago, will you contact Sanborn about it? I'm not going to. They have to give me more that convinces me that they may actually have something. I regularly get people coming in and saying, oh, it's the Fibonacci sequence, or it's Mary Magdalene, or it says Jesus saves, and you know, that just goes into the bit bucket.
Right. Right. Well, and that's why, you know, the Cryptost Goose is something completely irrelevant that I just made up. The Cryptost Group, you think I'd be better at talking after all these 99 episodes, but the Cryptost Group, I'm trying to say, if you're like me, I'm on the edge of my seat, and I'm thinking, well, what does this mean? What does that mean? And again, to go even outside of it, the significance of the first three parts and some of the clues, the significance of the text of the previous three messages that it resolved. It, a lot of references to underground or beneath or below and things like that, and other physical things like the Morse code on the slab. And is the location of the slab important, or the angle of the slab important, or the compass pointing to something? Are the latitude, longitude, true latitude and longitude, or are they pointing to a location on the crypto? I mean, there's so many questions that you just can't help but be pulled into this mystery.
Well, I can tell you about the latitude and longitude, that when we talked to Sanborn about that, he said that there was actually a USGS benchmark near the sculpture and that had the latitude and longitude written on it, and that he used that to make sure that his coordinates were correct.
Hmm.
So it's probably not referring to somebody, like, you shouldn't apply latitude and longitude to the crypto sculpture itself. It's probably referring to something that's actually on the ground. I should also say that if anyone wants to join the group, they are more than welcome to come in. To join the group, you want to send an email to the following address, cryptos-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. And if you forget that, just come to my website, ilanka.com/cryptos, and if you forget that, just go to Google or any search engine, it doesn't have to be Google, and type cryptos, and my site will come up pretty fast.
Yeah, the CIA might find out that you're Googling for cryptos and think you're a terrorist and might want to come after you or some bizarre... No, I'm just kidding. We'll get off the conspiracy theory.
I would have to do more than that for them to be on their radar screen.
Yeah, well, one would hope, but yeah. I'm just playing around. But I think we've got a few minutes, like 3 or 4 minutes left. But, I mean, if they're not motivated and interested in it, I mean, I swear, I think I'm going
to
join myself. I don't know if I can. Yeah, I don't think I can. I don't know if I can be the most active, just because I, like you, I've got so much going on and going to conferences and giving presentations and all this other stuff. But I definitely want to start following it, and maybe, like you said, it's a. I very much believe in brainstorming, getting together with people and bouncing ideas off, and, you know, I may come up with something that says, you know, hey, what about this? And somebody says, well, yeah, if you add that to this idea, you know, working together, teamwork is definitely, definitely the way to go, especially with something like this. I wish it was more accessible. I think that would help tremendously. If it was easier to get access to the object and get on there and look around and inspect things, because seeing something firsthand is a whole lot different than in pictures.
Right. I agree with that. I do know that after Sanborn made the sculpture for the CIA, the crypto sculpture, he made another piece which he called the Untitled Cryptos piece, which he sold to a private collector. And I've tracked down the current location of that, which is in the home of a millionaire in Los Angeles. And I was actually there a couple weeks ago looking at it. And there is a slightly larger version of that piece, of the Untitled Cryptos piece, which has a new name, which is Antipodes. and it is publicly visible at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. It does not look like Kryptos, but it has all of the text of Kryptos with a few changes. For example, the two main changes, one is that it's in a different order. Instead of going parts 1, 2, 3, 4, it actually starts with part 3, and it goes 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I think it starts over, and then it kind of truncates very suddenly. Another difference is that on the untitled piece, or Antipodes, there are two dots that are on the text there that are not on the version that's in CIA headquarters.
And
don't know why the one has dots and the other one doesn't. The dots correspond to the location of the initials WW. Oh, and one other major difference between Kryptos and the untitled Kryptos piece is that it's two halves, and one half has the text of Kryptos. The other half is all encrypted Russian text. And that Russian text has also been reproduced on another of Sanborn's sculptures called the Cyrillic Projector.
Right,
and
that's beautiful.
We know what the Cyrillic Projector says. That was cracked in 2003.
And that, to me, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful piece of art.
Yes,
I love the Cyrillic Projector. It's just beautiful to look at.
And I have links to all this and pictures of all this on my site.
Again, Alanka.com. And and let's kind of move out here and close up. Again, Alanka is very, very willing to help out and put information on her site. And the Kryptos group itself is very active with several members that are working on this as well. So by all means, get involved if you really are interested in this and find out more. And if nothing else, go to the site and read what Alanka has. Even that, honestly, even looking at the pictures and reading what's already been, may strike something in your head that maybe hadn't been thought of, may trigger something that maybe hasn't been thought of before. So please get involved with this. Check it out. It's definitely, definitely very cool. All right, and let me do some shouts here real quick. You've got some shouts. I'll stall for you for a second. I just have a couple quick shouts to Nick84. Of course, is always doing such great code for me, and I appreciate that so much, Nick, doing great, great stuff. And to Joke, one of the new guys at our 2600 meeting, hopefully he'll be coming back and sticking around. And how about you? What kind of shouts do you got?
Well, I want to say hi first to the folks at University of Missouri Rolla. They invited me out to speak specifically because they heard me on your other show, so I wanted to say
really?
Hi to them.
Wow.
Certainly all the folks at Meme Streams, St. Louis 2600, Midwest 2600, Greg, who's someone I've gotten back in touch with after 15 years. He was a sysop of one of the BBSs in Los Angeles way back in the 80s. And also to my friend who's been in and out of the hospital and was an engineer on the St. Louis Arch. His health has been poor lately. He's 82 years old. We're all worried about him. Mm. He was also kind of a biohacker or flower hacking. He would take flowers and hybridize them and make different kinds of breeds of daylilies. So there's pictures of his flowers all over the internet. I call it OC's flowers are blooming all over the net. So definitely a shout out to OC and his wife Dorothy.
Yeah, very, very good stuff. And actually, you know what? Let's make that the site of the week this week. www.stlouisarch.com. Go check out. They got some great photographs of that very famous landmark. And if you have email, feedback of any kind, send it to us at radio@benrev.com, or again, contact Alanka at alanka.com. And our closing music this week is from Lon Bobby. It's called Courage, a cool song I found over on Songfight, where I frequent quite a bit. And that is going to do it. Next week. Next week is episode 100. I already mentioned it's going to be our 100th episode extravaganza. So I don't know what that means, but I'll figure it out between now and then. But for now, Alanka, thank you for being on the show. And I think we should probably just tell everybody that we'll see them next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
If my soul, it would Oh,